Sorry, I'm going to turn this airplane mode.
All right, so we were talking about high school, and you're sort of thinking about where you were going to go to college. You said that you had this experience with needing physical therapy for
yeah.
your knee, and so that kind of like got it into your head that you wanted to pursue that as a career.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
talking with your tutor, Kathy, you said she was the one who sort of recommended that you look at Bradley College.
Yeah, I think it was her. My mom might have been doing internet research at the time, but regardless, yeah.
So did you look at any other colleges, or was it just Bradley?
I also applied to Mizzou, but I didn't. I only applied to Mizzou and Bradley. And I just assumed I was going to get into Bradley. And so I just applied to Mizzou just because. But, yeah, I guess, I mean, my biggest concern was the GRE. And then that was...
You mean the SAT?
The ACT. That's
ACT.
Right. That's not. We don't do the GRE now. The GRE is for college or for graduate school. Yes, the ACT.
Okay.
So I took that and I got accommodations for that, and my score was very poor, which is how I score on those type of tests. But something that was actually pretty awesome about that test was in the reading portion of it, I did really bad. But I did good for me, though. And the reason I did well for me is because, you know how they give passages about random things. And so, and then you have to, like, understand what is meant in those passages, right? And so that's how those, like, reading comprehensive things work. And that's something that's really difficult for me. One out of the four passages, I think, or the handful of passages that we had to write about or answer questions about. One of them was about the artist Hieronymus Bosch, and I had done a project on him, and I think it was the Garden of Heavenly Delight. I don't know. It was like that triptych one where it's all super weird, right? Hieronymus Bosch, and just really bizarre. And I was just like, oh, this guy's super cool. But it was about him. And so just that obscure artist. And so as soon as I started reading, I felt really good. And so then that... I don't think I did well in the reading section, but I'm pretty sure that probably increased my percentage. I probably bumped up a grade level. I might have increased like a 4 or 5 percentage or 6 or 7 percentage points because I knew some of the answers to some of the obscure questions because of what I read.
Yeah.
Or at least I think I did. I don't know. So getting that extended time was helpful, but also... randomly knowing what they're talking about also was really helpful too.
Were you very concerned about going into the ACT? Was this a
yeah?
Did you
I knew I was going to do bad. Yeah,
and take any of those sorts of prep classes?
I didn't take a prep class, but I studied with my tutor, Kathy, and that was definitely something where I was like, oh, I know I'm going to do poor on this. But yeah, I was always really nervous about standardized tests, and even still today, I don't have to take them anymore, but they sound horrible.
Yeah. And in terms of getting into college, were you concerned about your scores for that reason?
Yeah, I think I got, I think I probably got on the low end of what Bradley said was acceptable, because I remember getting my score and being like, oh, this is above what they said is the minimum. And usually the minimum is, I don't remember what the score was or even what it was out of. I think that maybe 36 or something, and I needed a 20 or I didn't need a very high
okay.
score. It was one of those things where it was like I was just above it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that, had that Hieronymus Bosch question not been on there, that could have affected it. I don't know.
Right. All right, so you decide to go to Bradley. You think you're going for physical therapy. Was there a culture shock at all? I mean, Peoria, Illinois is pretty far from St. Louis.
Yeah, so it's 3 hours away. It was hard. One, when I first went there, I got there early, and I walked onto the cross-country team. And so that was, I was never particularly fast in high school, always worked really hard, and went to like the first like cross country meeting, and so I had like an immediate in with like a group of students that I liked, and it was always, I think, because I was the worst person on that team. On the next person's worst day, on my best day, I couldn't touch them. And this was also, it was also Division I cross country. So like, I can still say like for like 3 years, so I ran for 3 years, I ran Division I cross country, but I was terrible. I was the worst one on the team. And I regularly got the last, like last place or like second or third or fourth to last. But like all the people running back there are like, hey, I'm doing this for fun. So it didn't really matter. I had like an immediate in, and I think because I wasn't taking anyone's spot, and once people got over like, oh, Colin's likable and he's also slow, I think that kind of helped out a little bit. I think that was good. So that helped. I also, when I first got there, I was staying in a single room, too, and I was staying in a single room because I wet the bed, and that's a really good way to destroy someone's self-esteem, is enuresis. This really wonderful way to make yourself feel horrible about yourself. And so I think my mom might have called the college or like Bradley and was like, "So Colin has this," and it wasn't like all the time, but it was enough to be horrible. You only have to pee yourself a few times to feel horrible. And so then I got my single room, and so then I was like, oh, well, now I'll need to really go out of my way to, like, meet people, you know, which is something that I never really had to do. And so then that was kind of difficult. And then also, like, lying to people about how I got a single room as a freshman. And I was like, oh, yes, I had an elaborate lie. But it was because I beat my bed. So that was something that was a little difficult, but I think it wasn't, I think in cross country, the group of guys that I ran with were really close right away. And so then that was like really, really helpful. And then as I got more into biology, you know, then I had a core group of biology friends, and then even the friends in my first dorm, you know. So then it was like I had a handful of friends in like different areas where kind of like float around. And so that helped out with the culture shock. I think so.
And what about the, like, academic? Was there an academic shock? You said you felt pretty prepared because of your tutor.
I felt prepared because of my tutor. And, like, this is when I was going through my, like, angsty, I'm 18, I know everything. And so then I was like, oh, high school is pointless. And it was one of those things. And I was like that for more years than I like to admit. And so I felt prepared. And another thing that I did, though, was, like, in college, I was like, oh, this is the first time I can prove to myself that the reason that I'm getting a good grade isn't because my parents, or isn't because of my older teachers liking my older brother, or people liking my sister, or people liking the Diedrichs, you know? And so then a lot of it was like, oh, well, every time I did something well, you know, I would be like, oh, well, there's always an asterisk by it that I always felt. And so then that was like, oh, well, now I can finally do it myself. And then I was very obsessive over it. I started taking Ritalin or Adderall or what the summer before college. And so that was, I mean, prescribed. And that was something that was really interesting because, like, I never read a book on my own prior to that. And I was actually able to read a book. And so that was like, I was like, oh, I get it. It's like a movie for my head. You know, I remember literally thinking that, right? And that's a dumb thing to think, but that's what books are, right? And the book, the first book I read like that I chose to read, I think was Kurt Vonnegut. It was like Ice Nine, I think, or Catch 22. It was one of those books. And it was just one of those weird, silly books. I was like, oh, this will be perfect. And so I think that that medication, which I never was on, I think that helped out a lot. And then it got to the point, though, where, because like as obsessive as I can get about things, and I still do, I have like my primary goal was like, okay, I need to get good grades, and I also need to run. And like those two things like dictated my life. And I studied probably maybe my freshman year, and I was like, you know, those medications, you titrate. And so you don't know exactly what level is going to work effectively. I started off on a dose that was too high, or it was too low, and then because I was running cross country, I talked to my doctor, and I was like, look, you know, we're running 60, 70 miles a week, you know, I don't have enough, you know, in me to, like, study later. And so we, like, jumped up to, like, the highest dose. And I loved it. It made me feel really good, because I was also feeling kind of high when I was in it. And I could study 12, 13, 14, 15 hours a day, super easy. And like, people aren't supposed to do that.
No.
Yeah, no. And so then, so that was that first semester. And then I started getting worried about it, because I was like, my heart rate's going really fast, but I can read things. And so I was like debating, like, what's worth, is my heart more important or grades? And so then towards the end of that semester, I went to my doctor and I was like, my biggest issue is that I like this too much. And so we reduced the low, or the titrated it down, and then I was studying, you know, not those like 12 hours a day, but probably close to like 8, 9, 10 hours a day, and this is every day. And it was I was like the student that would, I'd wake up early, I'd study for a few hours in the cafeteria, go to class, study in between classes, go to cross country practice for two, three hours, and then study. I was just studying. I just was able to study, and I just really wanted to learn. And I think it was like the first time in my life I ever felt smart, because like people would tell me I was smart with things, and other people would tell me I was stupid with certain things. And so it was this time I was like, oh, I'm actually doing well in my classes, and this is because of the hard work I'm putting in. But I mean, I was studying 40, 50 hours for a specific test. You know, and I used to have a rule where I was like, if I don't know it the day before, then I'm not going to learn it. You know, and which is, young Colin was so stupid. He's like, you need to study. You study right before things. But it was just very, because I was always like studying and always, I was just always very obsessive of that. And it wasn't until my first biology class that I like fell in love with biology. And I actually got the highest grade in my biology class, the first test I ever took in college. And like, I never got the highest grade on tests. And I think I got like a 96%. And I remember this is because the professor wrote the highest grade on the class and then said like, this is what the average is. This is what the standard deviation is. And I was like, oh my God. I remember hiding it, being really embarrassed and not telling people. I was like, oh my God, that 96 was me, or whatever it was. And just because I love the subject. But in order to get that 96%, I sat up close, I sat in the front row, or front two rows. I had a tape recorder. We get our PowerPoints, right? And so this was in 2002? Yeah, 2002, I think. So it was all like PowerPoint-based. Print out the PowerPoints, and then I would write the time on the recorder for every slide. And so it's like, oh, the first one starts at zero. The second one starts at like, is like 2 minutes. Then I would write my notes down. Then I would go to the library or go to my dorm, and I would re-listen to the lecture, which would take about twice as long, write out a detailed notes. I would highlight those notes and type those notes up. Then I would go through the book, and I would highlight the books, highlight the chapters that we were supposed to read, type those notes up, highlight those. Then I have two sets of typed notes. Then I would combine them, and then I would make flashcards from the typed note. Oh yeah, it was ridiculous. But it was just because I like really enjoyed learning.
That's amazing.
And so, but it was also one of those things where like, it's just because I had to. Like I learned early on that I had to study more than the average person. And so then I think that like, that 96%, I remember thinking like, oh, I think I studied 40 or 50 hours for this test over the course of a few weeks or a month. I don't know. And I remember two things specifically. One was I remember that an acquaintance of mine was complaining to me that I didn't study the day before. Remember my stupid rule? Don't study the day before. But he's like, I studied all night for this test, and you got an A on it, and I got a C or a B or something. And I was like, well, yeah, but like I studied for like 40 or 50 hours. Like, I studied for this class like at least 4 days a week for the last 5 weeks or 4 weeks or whatever it was. I was like, I was studying almost every day. And so realizing like, oh, I guess there's, I was like, I don't like this jealousy thing. This is weird. So then I like didn't want to talk about grades with people. But another thing though is I remember getting that 96 and being like, oh, I wonder how many hours the next person studied. And so then I had to come to the realization that how much other people study doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter to me. And so it's, I think that's something that a lot of people with learning disabilities, you're constantly comparing yourself to other people. And like, I was incredibly happy. My parents were worried, or my mom mostly was worried that I was studying too much and would like run and study. But when I would run, I was hanging out with my friends and also working out. But then I'd also study a lot because I liked it, you know? And so my balance was definitely was off, you know, and I studied most Friday nights and stuff. And so when I went out with my like cross country buddies who got decent grades, but when I went out, it was like a big deal. I was like, oh, Colin's going out. Oh, this is great, you know, because I just studied and studied. And I just felt like I got to the point where I was doing well, but I was never really satisfied with my grades. I have a problem with like being complacent. And so it's like, oh, well, if I'm getting, I got this good grade, okay, well, that was in the past. When's the next test? And so it doesn't matter anymore. And it's something that I still struggle with now, where it's like, oh, you get this paper out. Well, that's great, but that's in the past. What's the next step? And it's hard because it's, I'm constantly moving the goal like back. And it's something I even talk to my wife about a lot. And it's just like, well, why aren't you just happy with the things that you're doing? And I'm like, I am happy. But it's not enough, you know, and I need the next thing. And I'm fortunate enough where, like, I'm going through, like, having the horrible self-esteem of someone who wets the bed at summer camp to now where it's like, look, I know the things I'm bad at and know the things that I'm good at, to, like, now where it's like, look, yeah, so I said that I wanted this thing and this thing came, but I was like, I don't want to settle for that. I want this next thing. And so everything keeps getting pushed back, you know, and it works for me. But I think I learned that in college, because it was like, oh, I got this 96, but oh my God, now I need to get the next highest grade in the class again. And I don't think I ever got the highest grade again. But I did well, and I think I got an A in that class. But it was, yeah, so then that class made me feel really, like really like biology. And I was thinking, oh, well, maybe I want to be a clinician. And so then there was a class sophomore year that was a weed out class for the pre-med students and then the cell and molecular biology students, so the students with getting the biology degrees. They were like, oh my God, this class is so hard, and people kept complaining about it. And I was like, all right, I'll take it. And I literally took it because people were saying it was hard. And I was like, I'll take that challenge. And it wasn't necessarily like I want to get into research. It was a research-based course. But it was literally like, oh, people think this is a really hard class. And so I was like, all right, sign me up. I'll do it. And I'm really glad I did. And so then that was my sophomore year when I changed or I added a major or something. And then I think I was pre-med for a little bit, maybe not, and then changed it strictly to a research-based, getting a degree in cell molecular biology and wanting to go to grad school.
Can I ask a question? Previously, you mentioned being starting medication in college. Is there a reason that you weren't on medication during high school or previously?
Yeah, you know, I think it was a lack of knowledge, honestly, about what the treatments are. I think also I probably didn't want to take anything, and I was able to get decent grades without it, and so then I didn't think that it was necessary. It wasn't until I took two classes at a community college in St. Louis before my freshman year of college, and I took them so I could lessen the load. So if I took, you know, 6 credits, then it was 3 hours less each semester. You know, and that was some advice that one of our good friends, family friends, told us. And And so then I took those classes, and I also started taking the Ritalin. I think it was Ritalin at that time. And I would take it, you know, in the morning and in the afternoon. And so then that was like, oh, well, college is going to be so much harder than that. This is why I need to take the medication and stuff. And I think actually I've been was really fortunate because, like, the work ethic that I developed over the years, you know, with the help of Kathy, with the help of my parents and family and friends and everybody, because I can't, like, take credit for any of the things that I do. But, like, with, like, all that, like, that was developed and then without medication. So then when I had the medication too, then that's why I think that, like, I was able just to really study and just really, like, nonstop studying but it never bothered me. Like, I always enjoyed studying and I always enjoyed learning, and I had a hard time understanding when people wouldn't, or when people would study just a few days before a test. And I was like, well, why would you wait? Like, why wouldn't you read that chapter, like, a week ago when you were supposed to? It didn't like even occur to me, you know. So that was it.
Was there anything in particular about that biology class that you took that made you fall in love with it? Or do you think it was because you were able to devote so much, like, attention and time to it that you fell in love with it through the work? Like, I'm just interested in,
yeah,
in, like, what it was that drew you into this, like, career path, because going into, like, research science is not
something
that, you know, most people do.
So I think it's a few things. One is, I forget the degree that I was, the degree I went for was pre-physical therapy degree, whatever. And I think when I first went there, the one pre-physical therapy class that I was taking, like, for your first semester, because mostly it's electives, was this health course that I hated. And I hated it because I worked really hard on it, and I could tell that when I would for hours on, like, an essay or something, I'm like, oh, this is about health and health policy or whatever it was. I can't totally remember. And I remember the professor just giving, like, oh, check, turned it in, like, didn't read it. And I could tell that she didn't read it. You know, it was just like the random, like, dot, dot, dot on it. And so then they put me a really bad taste in my mouth, and I was like, if you're a teacher and and you are administering a test, or if you have an assignment, he should read it, especially if I'm working hard on it. And so then that sullied my experience a little bit, I think. But then, so while that was happening, I was taking the biology class and I was doing well. It's just general biology. But, like, it's, maybe it wasn't organismal biology, but it's just, I don't know, what I find so fascinating about biology, and this is what was initially started, I think, you know, this career path, is that biology basically explains what is going on inside a person, and what is going on, like, why things are the way that they are, just generally. And it's not like physics, because there's a lot of things that you can't see and we don't totally understand, and all these, like, weird theories and stuff, and there's still all those theories, but also, like, you know, our body is made up of a lot of cells and we don't understand a lot of things. As we dove more into, this is what cells do, and it's like, oh, well, how do cells know to do this? And it's like, oh, well, this is what a phenotype is. This is what a genotype is. A genotype, right? The random nucleotides for in DNA or RNA. And then the phenotype is, like, what it actually expresses. And so it's like, oh, well, then there's this connection here, but there's also a disconnect because there's environment that helps. Helps people, or, like, changes how people are, what those phenotypes are, and there's genetics that are based on this. And so it was just fascinating. And then there were, like, a lot of questions that were asked that weren't totally understood, that we didn't know. And this is, like, one of the first times that I realized that it's okay to not know something, you know. The more that I've learned over the years, and even in my area of research, and, you know, like, the more you know, the more you know you don't know, you know. And so it's, in biology, I feel like I started to get the first taste of that. And the professor, he was a geneticist, and so he spent a lot of time talking about genes, and it was just really cool. And I remember even learning about how like DNA, how replication happens, and how DNA unwinds, and how there's proteins that do all these very specific things, and it was just such a cool representation of how the body works and how everything needs to work appropriately in order for the whole organism to develop appropriately and be normal, or just like grow up. And when something bad happens, you can develop cancer, you know. And so it's like, oh, well, you develop cancer because of a mistake in a genome, you know, in a gene, and like one mistake can like override these protections that these enzymes have. And so then a lot of that just general stuff, it was more on the organism side that I was just fascinated with. I also was taking a psychology class, and I loved that because it was just about people and like how people think. And so I think that was why those two classes, when I was like, oh, well, maybe I'd want to go be a clinician. And then, so I think that I was studying so much, but I had these two classes that I really liked, the biology one mostly, and just like how things were, how people work and stuff was just really cool. And it was easy studying that much for it, you know.
Hmm. And so at what point did you decide, okay, I'm gonna set my sights on like a research career?
That would have been after, so I took organismal biology, which was my sophomore year, and that was that weed out college course. And that was something, what was it? So that was, you would design experiments, we'd have a project that was like, okay, so what percentage of alcohol makes beets, like cut up beets, change color the most? You know, it's like, oh, it was a higher alcohol content. It's like one of those studies. But you had to like write out a report to do that. Or like, how does water diffuse when you put it in a bag and there's a bunch of pores in this bag that are really small, but it's like salt water versus non, you know, like fresh water and stuff. Okay, so water osmolarity works for is like water travels to the most concentrated place, right? And so there's like a lot of these like really simple, really simple but delicate and just interesting, or not even interesting questions, but you could answer those questions and say like, okay, so wait, so why did this group over here get this percentage of alcohol in changing the beet's color, and why did we not? And it's like, oh, well, you know, we cut our beets in different sizes or something, and then we will learn about like the cross-sectional area. We learn about pores and how water transfers within within an organism and stuff. And so there was always like, there was a clear application for all the experiments that we were doing. And so that class I studied a lot for, and I was using the same study techniques, but it was more, I was studying more for that class than anything else because I just liked it so much. And I did real well in that class, and one of the professors that was running that class, his name was Eric Stabenow, he had an animal physiology lab, and I asked if I could join it. So it was the second semester of my sophomore year, and he had a few projects that were ongoing at that time, and the project that I joined was looking at, I think at least my senior year project, I think I looked at changes in mitochondrial oxygen consumption within the brains of Fisher rats that were given cocaine hydrochloric acid in a hypoxic environment. So let me break this down for you about how stupid this project was. But, or not stupid, how there were just so many variables about this project. But it was a great research experience. It was a research experiment where we were working with animals, we were giving them, my boss bought cocaine, HCL, from like Fisher, and it was always like locked key and stuff. But we would like measure it out, give it to these animals, and then measure their mitochondrial oxygen consumption after we homogenized their brains. So the rats were not, they were not very happy with us. And so that was one thing that was always really hard, is like the animal research aspect of it. But I always thought, though, that like, oh, well, this is to help me answer a question. But, you know, what question do we answer? Nothing really. But what it did was it allowed us to, or allowed me to really fall in love with science and really wanted to go into research. And so then I think it was that year where I was like, oh, well, I really want to, I want to research HIV. And then I had this goal of doing HIV research in sub-Saharan Africa, because I was like, I'd like to do HIV research, whatever that is, but in sub-Saharan Africa. I think that was like 2004, I think, or 2003, when I started thinking this. And I was writing all my goals now and at that time, too. Then it really just solidified everything that I wanted to do. And so then I started spending more and more time in this research lab over the next few years. And we were working on these projects. I became good friends with a handful of students that were in the lab and also in a lot of these like biology classes. And there was a lot of overlap between cross-country runners and biology, too. It's mostly the women cross-country runners, though. And so then it was like there was a lot of people that I really liked in it, and I loved biology. I started reading more about HIV, and like I picked up the book. What was it? I think it was called Invisible People. And like, I don't buy books very much, and it was just about how the U.S. government had like a really good chance to really dampen the HIV epidemic. Or this is right when it was like becoming known in like the early 80s, and how because the majority of transmission cases, especially early on, were through sex, and it was really hard to even like talk about that with like a more conservative government. And so like how it was just kind of like, oh, well, let's not deal with this. And so then it was one thing where I was like, oh, but they could have made policies that might have been able to help give like aid and stuff to certain areas. And so then, yeah, that was one thing where I was like, it's my first like taste of, or first like inkling of like, oh, well, what policy the government does, like that can actually affect people, and not even just like, it can affect people that aren't even Americans, you know, and stuff. And it's like, how, you know, what can you do to help? And so then that's when I like started just like really obsessing over it and being like, all right, well, I want to be this HIV researcher. I want to do something great, you know. Which that has changed, but it was nice. It was definitely really motivating, at least going through college.
So was there a professor working on HIV stuff at Bradley?
Not at Bradley, no. I just really wanted to, and when I started applying to colleges or to graduate schools, which was a horrible experience, I started looking at what they were doing, or which colleges have good HIV programs. Mm-hmm. And that was, I applied to Pitt, like, I wasn't planning on applying to Pitt, but I applied to 7 schools, and then it was like, one day I just was randomly looking up HIV researchers, and there were a lot at Pitt. And I was like, oh, I guess I could apply, and I sent in the $50 application fee or whatever it was, and applied. But it was one of those, like, well, I'm definitely getting into these other schools. And I got rejected from every other school. It was horrible. It was horrible. And like, I was just thankful that I did apply to Pitt.
Well, I don't. So, have you, when you were in college, and you're sort of getting your footing in the biology world, and thinking about going into research, was there ever a person or a moment when you thought, like, this is, or someone said, you know, maybe you should think twice about going down this path with, like,
oh, yeah, totally.
Your, you know, with your learning disabilities or whatever,
that yeah,
you felt
yeah.
like, you know.
Oh, yeah, totally. Okay. So I was really fortunate that I was surrounded by a lot of like really positive people, and people that didn't care that I had learning disabilities, and that's how I approach it. Like, I want to be like, oh, well, the reason I do this poorly is because of learning disability, and I want someone's response to be, oh, okay, like I don't care, like you will read well, fine, literally has nothing to do with me. Like, that's the reaction I prefer. I think for years I was trying to overcompensate. And so the reason that I was like studying so much is and like trying to get like the best grade in the class, which I did a handful of times, was to prove to everybody else that I could do it, and to prove, but mostly to prove to myself, where like it wasn't good enough. Even in that organismal biology class, that the class that made me fall in love with research, it wasn't good enough just to get an A in the class, which is really hard to get an A in. But it was like one of those like, oh, well, I want to get the best grade in this class, and like studying, and I don't remember, but I remember getting a high A in it, but it was because like that class I studied probably two times as much as I would study for my biology class, and so I was doing, you know, it was like nonstop. But it was just because I was, I don't know, I feel like imposter complex, and so a lot of it was just internal, where it was like, oh well, they're gonna figure out that you don't deserve to be here, or that you're really stupid, and so if I get a bad grade, then they're gonna say I'm stupid, and so that was a really big driving force. And so I think that like the biggest critic was myself. In college, I was pretty fortunate. Nothing rings a bell with like, oh well, why would you do this? Beyond like random conversations with people, like whether it's people in my family or people like friends, they'd be like, oh wait, science has a lot of reading. Why would you want to do that? It was mostly like that. I'm like, that is a logical question. Mm-hmm. You're bad at reading, and I'm, you know, then why would you want to do a career or follow a career that requires you to read a lot? It wasn't until, I'm going to jump ahead a little bit, it wasn't until graduate school, and we'll talk a lot more about this in detail, I think, but that I failed an oral comprehensive exam. And that is, you write a thesis proposal, your second year of grad school, so this would have been 2007, and then that gets, it's like the research you want to do over your next like 4 years of school or 5 years of school. Then that gets passed or failed, and then you orally defend that like a few weeks or a month after. And what happened, I took my oral defense and I failed it. And we can talk more about why I failed it later. But I failed it, and it was horrible. Because if you fail it twice, you get kicked out of school. Mm. You get a terminal master's, which is just the most arrogant. That's like the most arrogant thing a PhD program could do. It's like, oh, we'll just give you a master's, which is not very good. That's not very cool. Like, master's is still important. I failed that, and I deserved to fail. It wasn't like I was treated poorly. And I went to the head of disability resources here, and she's not here anymore, so I feel more comfortable saying this, at Pitt. And one thing she said to me was, she was like, oh, well, you failed this. She was like, okay, well, would you think about like going into business or something? And it was something like that. And I was like, what? So I was like, like, what? And I was like, no. And I was taken back by it. But like, you get used to it, I think, when you have learning disabilities, people saying stuff like that. And I was like, no. I don't want to go. If I wanted to go into business, I would have gone into business school. And she was like, oh, okay. And I was like, look, I want to do this. And so to her credit, she literally suggested it, even though I wasn't pleased with her suggesting it. And then immediately when I was like, no, I didn't go to business school, I want to do this. And she's like, oh, okay. And so then we worked on a plan to help like me like pass that comps. But so that's something that happened to me, and then happened to one of my other friends who had learning disabilities. This is a few years later when she was diagnosed here. And the same thing happened. She didn't fail her comps, but she got diagnosed and went to this head person, and the head person was like, oh, are you sure you want to do this? Which I guess, you know, if you're too sensitive to answer like, yes, I'm sure I want to do this, then maybe maybe I am a liberal snowflake. But like, look, like it's but it was one of those things where it's like, we deal with this stuff so much, like, just support. And to be fair, Pitt's been great about supporting and doing that. But so there were those, like, handful of times that happened. There were times, too, in interviews and stuff, because I did really bad on my GRE. And I think it was in the bottom 30 percentile in reading and 40% or 60 percentile in math, I think. But it was really, I'm sure I got the lowest matriculating student GRE at Pitt. And something that was happening here was, when I was interviewing at schools, I interviewed here and I interviewed at University of Chicago. My learning disabilities, I'm just going to be upfront about it. And then I realized that probably wasn't the right thing to do just because of the stigmas associated with it. And I ended up getting rejected from the University of Chicago. And a part of me was like, oh, well, so you go back and you check all, you're like, oh, well, wait, why did I get rejected? The interviews went so well and did all this. And I was like, oh yeah, I kept talking about my learning disabilities. And so then you start questioning things, whether that had anything to do with it or not. So then I regressed and was like, oh, I'm not going to talk to people about my learning disabilities when I go to grad school. Mm-hmm. So just beyond those few people and beyond the director of special services or whatever at in my high school, middle school, there haven't been a ton of people that have been very negative to me, or I feel like I've been able to surround myself with people that have been pretty positive with it. And I think in the scientific community it helps out because it doesn't matter as much, where it's like, oh, you have this, okay, yeah, that's fine. Yeah. But I realize that that's kind of a unique experience.
Were there any professors in your undergraduate experience who were particularly supportive or who encouraged you to pursue research?
Yeah. This Eric Stabenow, He was the professor that I did my research with, and he was really supportive. And he was one of those professors that, we would just joke around with, and there's a few of us that joined his lab and stuff. And it was, the first time that I felt friendly with a professor. And he was great and very, very knowledgeable. We were doing these projects. He was able to, have us ask a specific question, and he was able to, encourage us and stuff, and expected a lot from us. Was a pretty tough teacher, but that was really helpful. There was another professor, Al McCrell. He was the cell and molecular biology teacher, and one thing that he did in his classes, which was great, was he would put in up-to-date literature for the topics that we would discuss. And it was the amount of detail that was put into each of these lectures was way more than necessary. But it was really interesting though, because I remember other professors being I don't know why Al does this. But to us, it was yeah, it doesn't matter that the subunit of helicase, it's enzyme that snips DNA, is that he found research that showed that this enzyme is different than we thought. But it was he was showing us how science changes nonstop and how we keep adding to it. And textbooks are wonderful. People give textbooks a bad rap, but they're great. They give you a great foundation. But textbooks teach things as they should, as this is how this is, this is how this is. But as you get more, as you dive more in more depth of a specific topic, you learn that nothing is one or zero. There's so much stuff in between. And so that was really cool with him. I also had one of my favorite classes I ever took, and this is to date, was, it was Central American history, I think. And it was the first time, this is my my moment of being a student and being did my teachers in high school lie to me? It was one of those moments where I was I just had no idea. And this professor was this older lady. She was super tough, really just, she looked like, was one of those standard, who had a mean teacher? And a mean teacher, there's an older lady, just very skinny, I'm sure she wanted to walk around with a ruler or something. And she I don't think she was mean. But that was just the no BS. And I remember taking that class and thinking, and being wait a minute, why would the US government support this dictator in this country? I was that doesn't make sense, because we want to spread democracy, lady. And she was just nope. And it was really interesting. And it was just about I remember some train in Honduras that the U.S. government was oh, we need to fund this certain thing, and how, oh, this other person trying to control this other, the person that controls the one railroad, and whether it's Honduras or some other Central American country. And it was like how, like, oh, well, they need to back this other dictator to actually get this thing. And how it was like, there was like a lot of stuff that was happening behind the scenes that we just never learned. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was like really, really cool. I studied really hard for that class, and I got a B, and I am incredibly proud of that B. And it was all essay test, and I was like, I don't know if I can get an A in this class, which was like, I don't know, I definitely didn't get A's in all my classes, but I definitely was like, oh, this is a Central American history class. This is going to be super easy, and it wasn't, but I loved it because I definitely learned a lot. And I think like those, you know, with her being like, oh, yes, you can't really believe everything that you hear. You need to like dive in to say, to learn more about, don't take facts at their face value. And then with Eric Stabenow, with doing actual research, with Al McCrell, who was able to give us up-to-date information that was completely unnecessary, but it was like, oh, well, this subunit of this protein is not what people say it says in the book. Like, that was kind of cool. And so I feel like with a lot of these professors, and then there's like a handful of other ones that I just thought were really, that were just really great, they kind of shaped, yeah, my career, definitely.
Were all of your professors aware that you have a learning disability?
Yeah, yeah. And so one thing that was actually really cool about Bradley and is that Bradley forced, and I use forced as like a good term, not as it normally is, but it forced the students with learning disabilities to give, you meet with a representative from the disability office, you get a letter that says, I have learning disabilities and these are my accommodations. And they forced you to give that letter to the professor of your classes. And this is important because the most important thing that people with learning disabilities, and I think disabilities in general, is that you need to learn how to self-advocate. And so you need to say, look, like, this is something that I'm good at, this is something that I can do, this is something that I can't do. And what that does is that starts a dialogue. And I remember this the employee there, and I can't remember who it was, but she specifically said, like, she's like, we require our students to talk to the professors and stuff, and so this opens that dialogue, so it won't be hard when you do it the next time. And all of the professors, they all had, and like to date, they still do, they all have a sentence saying like, you know, following ADA requirements, you know, if anyone has any disabilities, please talk to me. And so I felt like people were really open. The professors were always very open about learning disabilities, and I was always very open to talk to them. And so, but that was another thing where I was like, oh, I'm giving you this, and I have learning disabilities, and I was like, oh, I bet you think I'm stupid, so now I need to get a good grade in this class. And so there was a lot of stuff like that really like forced me to like study more. I mean, it was just, I liked learning, but also I don't want people to think I was stupid, and that was like very important to me.
So you mentioned that Bradley College was sort of known for having good disability resources.
Yeah, yeah.
So were there other students around that also had disabilities that you...
There were. I prefer to study by myself, and so I don't think I got close to anyone with learning disabilities there. Something that was interesting with Bradley is that Bradley gave, and this is at the time, so Bradley University, they gave 2 hours of free tutoring to all their students. And so it was like for, you know, tutoring in the learning center or whatever it was. And if you were an athlete there, you got free, unlimited tutoring, okay? And so my freshman year there, so this is going from me, I've been going to tutors from like first grade to third grade, then the same tutor from third grade to 12th grade, right? So I'm a professional tutored student. And I remember I was taking calculus, which I was horrible at. I went to a tutor 4 hours a week for that. And then there was one other class. God, what was it? I don't think it was biology. Maybe it was literature. There were two classes. It was calculus, and then I don't know if I got tutored for biology, but I can't remember the other class. But these two classes, I was studying for 6 hours a week with a specific tutor, because like math just does not, like I will not figure out what the slope of this line is or anything beyond the slope. It just did not come naturally, and like I literally need someone to like walk me through every step. And so I was seeing this tutor or these tutors, and privately or whatever, because the school was paying for it, and they're paying $7 an hour, $8 an hour, whatever it was. And so the athletic director sent a nasty email to me and CC'd my coach and said, "Colin, why are you going to 6 hours of tutoring a week? There is a group math tutor at one of the times that you went. You should be going to the group tutor." And they were like, you're choosing up too much. You're taking advantage of the system." And so then I was like, "What?" I was like, "This is ridiculous." And also like, I called or emailed my coach, and I was like, "Dave, this is ridiculous. Like, we get free tutoring, and they're telling me that I can't take free tutoring." And I was like, "This is not." And he's like, "You just deal with it." He's like, "It's fine. It's whatever you want to do." And so then I told the athletic director, and this is self-advocacy. Like, I don't want to go. I was like, "Look, I'm an athlete. I'm a bad athlete, but I still am an athlete." And I was like, Bradley offers this free tutoring, I'm going to continue taking it. And so then, like, he couldn't stop me. Like, what? They don't want to spend, like, they're literally spending 4 hours worth, because 2 hours is covered by Bradley. So 4 hours worth, so like 20 some odd, 80 or 28 bucks a week for me. And in that calculus class, I went from a C to an A in the class, like an A minus, I think. And it was only because of these tutors and stuff. And like, it was really, like, it was hard. And I went to office hours with the professor, and like, I was like doing everything right. But it's like, there's always situations like that where, especially where people think like, "Oh, well, if you're not failing, if you're not doing something poorly, then you don't need help." And it's like, well, that shouldn't be the standard. Like, maybe the help is why I'm not doing poorly. Mm. You know, and I think that there's a lot of that stuff that goes on with people with disabilities, you know. Mm.
Did the athletic director know that you had learning disabilities?
I don't, probably not. Because it's not, it's definitely not public. I might have said it. I've gotten way more comfortable talking about my learning disabilities now than I was then. Mm. I was open about it, like to the point where I would screw something up and I'd be like, learning disabilities. And my friends would be like, "Colin, shut up." Like, that is not it. And so I'd be like, "All right." But that was just as a joke. I don't know, and I don't know if I mentioned it. I might have when I was, because this is when I was in my like angsty phase. I might have been like, "I have learning disabilities, and I get this, and I deserve this. I pay your salary." No, I don't think I ever said that. But it was nice that my coach was fine with me taking more time, and also I felt like because I was getting good grades, that helped me out with being on the team, because I raised the overall GPA of the team some. Cool.
Do you have any follow-up questions? Okay, I think I'm gonna call it a day then.
Okay.